Word of mouth.
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 This is Word of Mouth from New Hampshire Public Radio. I'm Virginia Prescott. In 1978, a message about a new word processing system went out to about 400 users of ARPANET. That's the U.S. government-sponsored progenitor of the World Wide Web. It was the first example of a new form of advertising, one we now know all too well as Internet spam. By 1978, the Mad Men era was snuffing out its last cigarette, the seeds of ultra-lucrative celebrity endorsements were bursting open, and dawn was about to break on the days of digital. That same year, Adweek launched. The publication is marking its 35th anniversary with 35 years that changed advertising. It's a slideshow of some pivotal moments in the history of the industry. David Greiner is contributing editor at Adweek. And David, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Do you have an idea of what advertisers think is the greatest ad ever?
Typically, the greatest ad honor goes to Apple's 1984, which actually first ran in 1983 in the last few seconds of the year so that they could squeeze it in for award show consideration the next year, but kind of redefined what the scope, the cinematic kind of depth of advertising that was possible.
Let's play just a little bit, directed by Ridley Scott, the Apple 1984 ad, as it's known.
We shall prevail.
On January 24th, Apple Computer will introduce Macintosh. And you'll see why 1984 won't be like 1984.
Tell us, David, what was going on in that ad?
Well, that was the launch of the Macintosh, obviously one of the most kind of iconic turning points of the computer age. And in the ad, we see this very 1984 setting, very drab, drone-like crowds watching a large screen with a Big Brother-type figure, and a heroic, colorful Apple-representing figure comes running down the walkway and throws a sledgehammer at the screen, shattering it, and then fades to an announcement of the Macintosh coming out that year. And really was kind of one of the first ads to seem that dramatic and, like I said, cinematic, almost like a short film.
And we learned from your slideshow or your retrospective that Apple's board was originally against the ad.
Yeah, the 1984 ad came at a really awkward time for Apple. The board was trying to drive out Steve Jobs. It was a very divisive time at the company that was trying to figure out what they wanted to do. And the board did not want them to run this ad. They were firmly against it. And in fact, there have been some stories since then that the agency and Steve Jobs kind of colluded to ignore these repeated requests to not run the ad and slip by and got it into the Super Bowl anyway. And of course, it almost immediately became one of the greatest ads of all time.
Apple is kind of a frequent flyer in this retrospective of 35 years of advertising. You point out the 2003 campaign for the iPod, that black silhouette with the white earbuds. Also, we hear again about Super Bowl ads. Tell us about the origins of the quote-unquote Super Bowl ad.
Well, the Super Bowl really hadn't become known as the place for amazing advertising until the early 80s, and we really saw that in 1980 with the Mean Joe Green ad, the kind of famous Hey Kid Catch ad that created this idea of blockbuster advertising.
I just want you to know, I think you're the best ever.
Yeah, sure.
Want my Coke? It's okay, you can have it.
No.
Really, you can have it.
Okay.
A Coke
Thanks.
And a smile makes me feel good.
How much of these sort of play on an emotion? Is that part of the thing that works with advertising, something that flips your idea around?
I think a great story, a great character is really the recurring theme that I found going back. I'm only 36 years old, so going through 35 years of advertising was kind of an interesting process. But what we saw is great characters really become as iconic, sometimes even more iconic than great slogans. And I think we still think back to that moment with Mean Joe Green. Now, he's a real person, but then obviously we think back to a lot of the fictional spokespeople as well, and the real-life spokespeople, the Lee Iacocca's, the Dave Thomas, Wendy's. Those characters, those people ended up being something that everyone could latch onto in their minds and think back to and really become kind of our strongest memories of advertising.
That is what's so interesting. Flipping through this, I was thinking, oh, excuse me, do you have any Grey Poupon launched? And, you know, where's the beef and got to make the donuts and that kind of thing? These are all part of our cultural vernacular, or they certainly were for a long time, and many of them last long after the ads are off the air.
Some of the best slogans are the ones that keep enduring long after they've officially stopped running. Where's the beef probably is the iconic slogan for advertising, and it only ran for less than a year. Within a year, they had decided that it wasn't supposed to be a slogan. It was just supposed to be a punchline to one ad for Wendy's. But it caught on. There was a song on the radio. It became such a big thing. It was used in the presidential debates and became such a cultural phenomenon so quickly. But within a year, they had decided, well, that's not our slogan. We're going to move on to a more official slogan. And then they kind of floundered around for years trying to find something as compelling as that. But meanwhile, that slogan survives to this day. It's something that even kids who weren't around when it first aired are still quoting.
Where's the beef?
Some hamburger places give you a lot less beef on a lot of bun.
Where's the beef?
At Wendy's, we serve a hamburger we modestly call a single. And Wendy's single has more beef than the Whopper or Big Mac. At Wendy's, you get more beef and less bun.
Hey, where's the beef? I don't think there's anybody back there.
You want something better.
That was Wendy's Where's the Beef ad from 1984. We're going through some of the most important moments in advertising in the 35 years that Adweek has been covering the industry. David Greiner's with us. He's a contributing editor at Adweek. Well, David, if the Apple 1984 commercial was among the most successful, any big disasters in your record of 35 years?
Well, I think the bar for disaster was definitely set by the launch of New Coke, which up until then, any child of the 80s remembers New Coke extremely well, because it had seemed up until that point that Coca-Cola could do no wrong, that Pepsi would always be the number two, that despite a lot of growth, they would just never catch up to that. But the reality was that Coke had been feeling the pressure of Pepsi, which is a little sweeter and had a little more pop culture appeal. And so they tried to appeal to that by making their formula a little sweeter and then also getting a more hip and trendy young vibe for their advertising. The whole thing was an absolute disaster. It was just a perfect example of not knowing what people wanted from you.
Attention Pepsi drinkers, introducing the new taste of Coca-Cola, the best Coca-Cola ever. That's all I'm going to say. In fact, that's all I have to say. No more words.
When Adweek started in 1978, it really does feel like we're in a very different era than we are now, when digital media, social media, online media have taken advertising in all sorts of new directions. So what do you identify as the kind of turning point to a different way of telling stories in a different medium?
Well, it's hard to pin it to one exact moment or even one exact year, because it was this gradual rise of digital, of brands, and this idea of creating a brand was still a very new concept, and now it's something that even for those, you know, normal people who don't work in advertising, don't sit around thinking a lot about it. But when we think of Nike, we think of just do it. When we think of milk, we think of got milk. These are very carefully crafted brands that go far beyond a tagline. And they really, in my opinion, didn't come to life until digital really came along. And again, that was the slow process over the 90s, especially, where suddenly you don't have to wait for commercial breaks to interact with these companies. It starts to become just part of your daily life. And now, obviously, for better or worse, that's kind of the world we live in, where we're surrounded by companies and brands and messaging. And sometimes that's good, and most of the times that's obnoxious.
Well, you also point out in this digital onslaught in 2008, Facebook sort of stomps on MySpace, which had just as much promise as Facebook had, but different kinds of leadership. Yes, huge story. But what does it still mean for advertisers, David Greiner? Of course, we are seeing 30-second web ads that some people wait all the way through, some people don't. We're still stuck in the banner ad era to some degree. Will advertising ever be able to regain the kind of force that it had in the, let's say, the golden age of television?
Well, I think what's interesting is reading up, when I went back and really read into the origins of Google and Facebook, both of them, and this kind of famously came up in the Social Network movie as well, both were very anti-advertising and really did not want it to be a big part of the experience. The founders of Google were really worried that advertising would sway the search results and would be kind of the opposite of what their users wanted. And I think what's fascinating is those two grew to be pretty much the largest advertising mediums on Earth. So I think we've kind of seen this new golden age arise where it's less about the gigantic ads and the big expensive ads, and it's more about the quantity. For advertisers, that's a good thing. For most of us, that's a bad thing. But I think you've also seen the other side of that coin is that digital has opened up the ability for people to make 2 minutes or 2.5 minutes. If you've got a really great ad, you can let it run as long as you want because you're not held to these 30 seconds or 15 second spaces that networks are trying to enforce on you.
Or, of course, you have Red Bull, the experience disguised as an ad, like in 2012, sending a man to space.
Yeah, that was really, we always joke that how far can extreme advertisers go, these brands that sponsor motocross and snowboarding and extreme everything, and, you know, how much farther can you go? And that's why it was fascinating to see Red Bull actually go to space to take someone up into the stratosphere and drop them and really kind of showed, oh, we're willing to just keep going. And the results of that prove that it's worth doing, that they still got millions and millions of viewers just by a YouTube alone, but then they also got traditional TV coverage, and everyone was talking about it because it was an experience that was also an ad, but it was just great to watch.
The moment that had us riveted and millions all over the world watching, this is a space helmet right here, worn by the daredevil Felix Baumgartner as he comes out of his capsule right there, jumping, attempting the highest skydive ever. Free-falling at speeds that surpass 700 miles an hour.
It's easy to be cynical about how much advertising influences our lives and creeps into our lives, you know, from the ads that are playing when we're pumping gas to whatever's coming at us when we log onto a website to read something. But something I thought of when looking at this, just the abundant creativity. What strikes you as you look at this? This is what people with artistic sentiments and sensibilities sort of focused their lives on over the last 40 years.
Well, one thing that kept coming out to me, I spent weeks going back through archives of every Adweek issue I could find. And what was amazing was to see, well, for one, it's just, and I think we all know this, there's just very few amazing ads. There's very few fantastic ads that we're going to talk about and that we're going to be quoting 20 years from now. But what was fascinating is seeing how slowly our culture kind of comes along to those, because it takes us a little while to realize, hey, wait, that's actually pretty amazing, because we have this instinctive barrier of ads are annoying, ads are dumb, and then sometimes we get it right away, but more often I think the best ad campaigns and the best ad ideas were the ones that took a few weeks for everyone from the Adweek writers to the public to the brands themselves to kind of realize we've got something here. This is something that we could end up talking about for years, not just for a few days after it aired on the Super Bowl.
David Greiner, contributing editor for Adweek, thank you for your time today. Adweek is celebrating its 35th anniversary with a look back at some of the most pivotal moments in advertising and marketing since it first began publishing in 1978. You'll find a link to look at that slideshow at wordofmouthradio.org. Stick around. There's more Word of Mouth coming up after the break.